Before we begin, Simon and I want to acknowledge that we're recording this podcast on the unceded land of the Wurundjeri Woiwurrung people of the Kulin Nations. We also want to acknowledge that we met and grew up together on the land of the Combermary people, and we'd like to acknowledge and pay our respects to Combermary and Kulin elders past and present, and extend that respect to First Nations listeners.
Always was, always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome back to Broadly Relevant.
I'm Ryan Hamilton.
And I'm Simran Pasricha.
And this is the podcast for Burnt Out Divas.
Trying to stay broadly relevant.
Okay, so Simran, I really want to know what is in for you this week.
Ooh, what is in? Rest. Rest is in.
Oh, wow.
I know it never is usually, but in fact, it needs to be. Oh my God, all of pickleball. I tried pickleball yesterday. It's in, you guys.
It is.
Did you know that it was named after a dog named Pickle? What's your
really?
In? Yeah. What's your in?
Notebooks, like physical notebooks. You
yes.
can write in them and you
physical
carry them.
Physical media. I was so surprised seeing Ryan right away in his little notebook.
They're really handy.
He's the OG iPad kid, so this is surprising.
I'm into it.
Broadly culture. Lots happening in culture this week.
Massive week.
Do you want to go first, Ryan?
Sure. It's a quick one.
Yeah.
So Coachella rages on.
It sure does. And I will say, Justin Bieber did redeem himself.
Oh, a week's gone and you're like, well, now
no,
I'm
well, he
Justin
had
Bieber.
Coachella weekend too. And I was like, okay, I accept. He brought on Billie Eilish as One Less Lonely Girl.
Brilliant.
Like SZA was on there as well. Like, you know, it was a grand old time.
Yeah, because it was great the first week, okay?
No.
I was there at the time supporting him.
No, he heard our podcast and he said, okay, I see your notes and I'm going to go back to the drawing board, you know?
Madonna performed with Sabrina Carpenter, which is slay.
Amazing.
But the major tea is that Madonna's outfits were stolen after the show
yes.
by someone backstage. And it's big tea because they were archival pieces from the first time she performed at Coachella in 2006, which I did read. And I was like, that's a bit late to be like for Madonna to be premiering at Coachella.
I know.
But did you know Coachella only came out in 1999?
Oh, true.
We're
the year
older
I was
than
born.
Coachella.
No, I was born in 19.
Wait. True.
You're old. I'm not. I'm young forever.
I predate Coachella.
I'm young forever. You predate.
But, yeah, yes. Madonna's outfits are stolen, so she's putting up a reward.
Tea.
And it's this article that I'm reading, there's no actual quote for, like, what the award is, but she seems devastated. She says, these aren't just clothes. They're part of my history. Other archival items from the same era went missing, and I'm hoping and praying that some kind soul will find these items and reach out to my team. And I just, you know, she's hoping and praying and I'm sending thoughts and prayers.
There's a reward.
Yeah.
Which is so exciting, but she didn't specify what the reward was.
What, I did say that.
What? Oh, sorry.
Mere seconds
said
ago.
It so. It's important, like, not to listen to white people sometimes, you know? You know, it's like a good practice
no,
to have.
No, of course.
Yeah.
Decolonization.
Yeah. Have you heard of it?
I have.
So what would you like the reward to be?
Surely, like, front row tickets to a Madonna concert.
Yeah, or, like, a personal show would be awesome. Or...
I feel like a personal show would be so awkward.
Different clothes. Like, I want other clothes. I'll exchange. A clothing swap.
Do you ever think about Madonna at Eurovision in 2018?
Not often.
I think about it all the time.
Yeah.
Do you know what she did?
No.
No, this was Eurovision in 2019. So in 2018, an Israeli singer won Eurovision.
Yeah.
And so Eurovision was held in 2019 in Tel Aviv. And Madonna was slated to be the interval act.
Yeah.
And when she got up to perform, she had two dancers. This was like not sanctioned by the organizers, but she just like organized her two dancers. At one point at the end of her dance, they like pulled off jackets and one was wearing the Palestine flag, one was wearing the Israeli flag, and they like held hands and walked upstairs together. And I was like, at the time I was like, that's crazy and brilliant and I love it. Now I'm a little like, from the river to the sea.
Yeah.
But like, how kind, you know, yeah. Madonna did that.
No, totally. Yeah. No, absolutely.
Another
actually,
Icelandic
I do remember
band
that.
Actually had to run because they also pulled out the Palestine flag and then
wow.
literally they finished their performance.
Yeah.
And then they like ran to the airport.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I know.
Wow. I always love when you come out with Eurovision tea. That's my favorite tea.
Well, yeah, we're really not watching Eurovision this year.
Yeah, certainly not. My tea.
Please.
Okay. So this one, I think might get me canceled by the girls. I will
Wait.
Say.
Okay. Go on.
Because it is a book talk situation.
About that boy.
Which boy?
In the tractor?
No. Luke, no. No, this is about Emily Henry's beach read. Emily Henry is like a romance book author, and she's really, really big. I've loved her books. She has so many of them.
Can you say her name again?
Emily Henry? What did I say? Is that not what I said?
No, sorry. I swear you said something that sounded like beetroot, and then I just started thinking
the book's name is Beach Read.
I just zoned out, and I was seeing
Beach
red.
Read. totally. No, it's Beach Read. So Emily Henry is like
Beach Read?
Beach Read. Like book. Oh, it's like, that's like a type. It's like, oh.
Like reading on the sand.
Yes, it's like when you recommend a book to someone, sometimes you're like, it's a beach read. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it's about like these two people that go.
I was like, you're either saying beetroot or petri, like petri dish. I was so lost.
And close.
Beetroot.
So anyways, yes, Beach Read is being adapted on Prime Video. Emily Henry is on an adaptation role. People We Meet on Vacation was adapted on Netflix. But people really have very strong feelings about who has been cast in this adaptation. So the first person who was cast ages ago was the Bridgerton girl, the first ever Bridgerton
Nicola.
Diamond. No, different Bridgerton. Oh, I guess she is like literally the Bridgerton girl. But no, I'm talking about Phoebe. I don't know how to pronounce her name. Dynevor. Dynevor. Phoebe Dynevor.
Dynevor. Is she white? Okay.
Yes.
We're allowed to butcher the last name.
Totally. she's an English actress. So can do. So Phoebe, she's been cast as the lead, female lead. And then recently, Patrick Schwarzenegger was cast as the male lead. And so he'll be playing the character of Gus.
He was the one in...
Gus Everett?
He was the one with the brother in the thing on the beach.
Yes. Yes. White Lotus, yes. You mean? Yeah, yeah. We got there, babe. We got there. But people are really fucking mad at this pick for Gus Everett. So Patrick Schwarzenegger has really been like feeling it in the comment section of his Instagram post announcing the role. And I was talking to my friend Ali Daisy King about it. I actually don't think I actually talked to her about it. I think I've just seen so many videos of her. And like,
I have a parasocial relationship with my friend.
Yeah. And she was talking about it on her podcast, Book Smart, which we'll link down below because they do a really good unpacking of this situation. And she is not for the casting whatsoever, because the way that they describe it in the book, it's like, okay, so he's described as this all sharp cheap bones, furiously dark eyes, and the leanly muscled arms of a grave digger turned novelist. His hair had like streaks of gray with it, and a 5 o'clock shadow, whatever, darker features. I always assumed that he was ethnic, so this was also a surprise to me he was a white man, like being cast as a white man. But it brings the question, I guess. I don't think you understand the amount of like passion and vitriol from this casting was like nothing I've ever seen before. People were so, so upset. A couple different reasons. A, they didn't think that he would look like this. B, Gus is like, he's pretty like Democrat coded, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah. And Patrick Schwarzenegger is like Republican coded, mostly because his dad is, is like conservative, like, you know, Patrick has like technically like distanced himself from like far right wing things, but you know, like he's like rooted.
Well, I think it was Kamala who said something about coconut trees.
Exactly. Exactly. You don't follow that, babe. So the tea is on, but I would say, okay. So it brings the question. Cosmopolitan then posted this. I thought it was an article, but it was actually just an Instagram post. How much influence should fans have on casting?
Oh, that's an interesting question.
Right? And I was like, that is so interesting. And the example that they used was Odessa Azion, who was cast as Zoe Gutierrez in an upcoming adaptation of Deep Cuts. And fans pointed out that the role should be played by an actor who is both Jewish and of Latina descent. Odessa is Jewish, but Odessa later dropped out of the project on her own accord because she was like, oh, on Instagram, she wrote this. She was like, I'd never take a role from someone else that's meant to do it. That should do it.
Someone tell that to Eddie Redmayne.
Who is Eddie Redmayne?
The Danish woman.
Oh my God, so true. Yeah. Wow, that's his name.
He was in Les Mis.
Yeah, no, I know. I know exactly what you're talking about, and yeah. I know exactly the scandal, and I know why we should be calling out him out on it. I just didn't know that was a name. Yeah.
Totally.
Again, forget white people. Decolonization.
Forgive and forget.
Yes. No. You wish. Anyways, this is going to be great to edit, but I was like, okay, that's like very interesting because personally, I do think this is like, it's quite an overreaction. People are like, we're not going to watch the movie. Like, this is terrible. I think most people are like, not, I like get like the people who are like, oh, it should have been Dave Patel always. Or like, it should have been like a person of color always. It's not strictly written as that, but it's just like coded yeah. as that. But the people like, who are just like
Hermione,
I don't know this lore.
Okay.
Go, tell me.
I'm not familiar with the Harry Potter lore.
Yeah.
But there's, I think, within the fandom, and obviously disavowing Harry Potter entirely.
Yeah.
But I think within the fandom, there is some discussion that Hermione could be read as black.
Right.
And I think J.K. Rowling has made a bunch of statements where she's like, well, she's not explicitly white in the text.
Mm-hmm.
Back when she was like, Dumbledore's gay, like, and doing her like, there's actually so much diversity in this text. And I'm like, okay.
T. Before.
But, well, you know, in conjunction.
Yeah. So, I guess very similar.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyways, but I actually think that people might be overreacting because, in fact, like, people are like, oh, it's like the chemistry, like, they won't have chemistry, blah, blah, blah. In fact, actors play pretend for a living. You know what I mean? And people can dye their hair.
Okay.
And I think at this moment, I think we're taking it too seriously, especially when we haven't seen it yet. I think we can, I'm so down for like bashing the movie once it's out, but I don't think that it's, I think that you should give it a chance first. Is that wrong of me? Is that very like,
but okay,
it sucks because I have to defend a white man.
Yeah,
because
I'm, your take is defending.
I know, and I hate it. I hate it, but it is a woman of color who casted him, so.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, why is the default always read as white, you know?
No, I guess I agree. But I don't think that the majority of people that are are upset about this casting choice are harping, like, are concentrated on that fact.
Yeah.
They couldn't see this person.
Oh, they're just like, he's wrong.
He's just wrong.
Oh, they're not anti-racist.
Yeah.
They're just like fans.
They're just well, yeah. And I do think that fans like should, it's like fun to like fan cast
sure.
things, you know what I mean?
But I mean, I guess it's that thing that I like adaptation.
Yeah. Ultimately, I don't believe that. I don't believe in adaptations.
Well, but like, yeah, like it's an adaptation doesn't exist to do the thing again. It's like, what are the ideas from this thing that we can bring to this other medium?
Yeah.
And it's like, adaptation is a process of like translation rather than like just doing it. You know what I mean? And so like, I think this was like a conversation around Wuthering Heights when it came out, which I still haven't seen and I probably won't because the reviews slammed it. But it's like, I think accuracy isn't the most important thing in adaptation, but rather making sure that what you create stands on its own as a good thing.
Totally. Ooh, you ate with
but
that.
But it's a different discussion as to whether like, Patrick will be the good thing.
Yeah.
You know? But
yeah. Yeah. I don't know if he'll be like the good thing on its own. You know what I mean? Like, I don't rate, like, you know, I don't think he's like the voice of our generation or like the actor of our generation or
you
anything
think?
Like that. I don't think,
well,
you know?
You think Eddie Redmayne?
No more. I will not defend white men anymore. You can't make me, okay? It's been really hard because obviously that is never my stance.
Yeah.
But I don't think I'm really defending the white man. I'm defending the showrunner of this, which is Yulin Kwong.
Broadly News. Do you want to go first for news? Because I feel like I'm going to yap longer for news.
Okay. Okay, so ABC is coming out with a Four Corners episode about ADHD.
That's
how,
ABC Australia.
Sorry?
ABC
yes,
Australia.
ABC Australia. About how ADHD rates in adults are skyrocketing. And they have done this investigation to say that it's actually dependent on where you live.
What?
Yes.
Wait.
Oh, like they're just like looking at like the diagnosis rates in each around basically.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. So researchers at UNSW analyzed prescription records for adults aged 20 to 65 and found that 2.36% filled at least one ADHD medication script in the 2025 financial year. Just shy of the estimated true adult prevalence of 2.5 to 3%. And on the surface, that looks pretty reasonable. But once you kind of like zoom into that by postcode, the variation is kind of is real random, because it'll be like so much in one place and then like barely diagnosing ADHD at all in other places. Western Australia is the standout outlier, though, home to 13 of the 20 highest prescribing neighborhoods in the country, randomly. Fremantle, really up there. But of course...
What other suburbs? Like Nashville?
Okay, yes. No, I was just getting to that.
Sorry, I'm like, I want to solve this conundrum.
Brunswick.
Yeah, okay.
Coburg, Darwin okay. South. Okay. That was in Victoria. Marrickville, yeah. Sydenham, Petersham, and the Blue Mountains in New South Wales.
I do feel like I'm getting a vibe.
Yes. Okay. So,
do you have Brisbane suburbs?
Let me scroll.
I love this game.
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I prepped and I didn't put Queensland in here. I forget my past. just like that, I forgot my past.
That's
wait.
Colonial.
Let me see. Mm-hmm. Brisbane Inner North is pretty high up there.
Yeah, okay. Okay, so more progressive suburbs are doing the diagnosing.
Right, and like richer suburbs also, like in some different areas. And I mostly am like wanting to talk about this because I saw a TikTok by Matilda Bosley, who is a reporter at The Guardian.
Yes, who used to have a podcast with a former friend of ours from uni.
Yes!
From high school.
It was a great podcast with Justine Lynn Sentley, both great journalists. But yeah, basically the investigation kind of looks at like how different the diagnosis rates are in different places, and it essentially implies that 90% of adults with ADHD there like might be missed in like certain areas. So obviously cost is a key gatekeeper. You know, like a proper ADHD assessment and treatment can run like into the thousands, and there's like very few publicly funded ADHD services. Overall, more advantage areas tend to have higher prescribing, but the data also shows that non-wealthy hotspots, meaning income alone, doesn't also explain the patterns. So it was like very confusing, but essentially it was all like very much like there's lots of diagnosis, but then there isn't diagnosis, and it kind of misses out on like why certain like places are diagnosed. Like not only is it because of its like high income areas, but I also would say that like Brunswick and like Fitzroy and like Coburg and things like that are
wokeness.
It's but I think ADHD people have been like shown to be more attracted to like artistic fields, you know, and a lot of them like okay. hub in that area.
Yeah,
what Matilda Bosley was trying to say. I really didn't like segue into like her TikTok at all, but we'll link it down to low. But
if you're listening at home, that recording has several like minute long silences while Simran's looking up
while
additional
I'm
information.
Looking into my notes, I'm like, I don't know. Clearly, okay, I'm one of those people who hasn't been formally diagnosed with ADHD.
But you do live in Brunswick.
I do live in Brunswick. Don't dox me. I'm looking at my notes and it's a terrible time. But Matilda Bosley said in her TikTok, she said,
try a physical notebook. They're like so
does it one time. Watch next episode. It won't be here. It'll be lost by the end of the day.
No, it's so useful because I used it all during Comedy Fest for all my reflections.
Ryan, enough with your ADHD.
Sorry, I know we're getting sidetracked, but like I tried this thing where I wrote down reflections on the paper.
Yes. Yeah.
And it was good.
He's a real journalist. Okay, so
back to
Matilda.
You.
I keep all of this in. Matilda Bosley said, I'm worried that this focus on overdiagnosis will make it even harder for the people who do have ADHD to get help. We're already dealing with medication shortages and huge stigma. I don't want to see a world where doctors are too scared to diagnose people who actually need it because they're afraid of being labeled a pill mill. Because in the report, it talks a lot about like medication with it and how they kind of looked at people who got diagnosed and then like immediately just went and like just had medication and didn't have like any other support systems around it or like any other behavioral things that they changed like within their diagnosis. So I think it was I loved the investigation, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
And it's a great one, and we will link it down the below. And we haven't the Four Corners like TV situation hasn't come out yet at the time of recording, but I do think that we have to be a bit more careful about how we go about reporting on this, like, diagnosis and...
Well, why is the framing that, like, there's overdiagnosis in these suburbs and actually there's underdiagnosis everywhere else? You know what I mean?
Exactly. And yeah. I think maybe that's, like, partly... That's what I'm, like, taking from it. Also, yeah. you know, maybe that's, like, not what they're actually trying to frame it as. But I have written about how we... Like, questioning if we're, like, living in an overdiagnosis world, especially because, like, everything on TikTok is telling me, you know, there was a boom of, like, oh, everything on TikTok, everyone has ADHD and, like, la, la, la. But ultimately, I think it's more harmful to, and I've, like, spoken to psychologists and psychiatrists about this. Ultimately, I think it's more harmful to move away from diagnosis.
Yeah. Self-diagnosis is valid.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's valid, but I think it doesn't, I think... It doesn't set you up
sure
very well. I don't think that's the fault of the individual, though.
No, but like I think I haven't read the study, but like I imagine that there would be gaps in the study for people who are self-diagnosing.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then self-sourcing medication. And yeah. Also like dealing with like giving themselves tools to like work with ADHD.
Yeah.
Without going through formal channels.
Yeah.
Because also there is like fear from people in the community. I won't name any names. It's me.
Yeah.
Who don't want to get formally diagnosed because, you know, like what was it like 2 years ago, mm-hmm. the Queensland government was looking at making it harder for people with ADHD to keep their license renewed or something, like additional tests and stuff. And like, you know, when you look at like the way that like immigration to different places is also like contingent upon like mm-hmm. disability and what models of disability. It's like, do you want to be like, actually, is it useful to have all these like things diagnosed and medicalized and recorded?
Yeah.
When, you know, can we trust the state?
And that's the tea. Go on. Go next to yours. Go on to yours now, because that's so funny. What can we trust, Ryan?
So the news article that I want to talk to you about is breaking news. Mm. It came out like today. And basically Apple, who you may know for having made the laptop that you're looking at and the phone that you're currently holding, has announced a CEO transition. So the current CEO is Tim Cook, who's been the CEO for like since 2011 when Steve Jobs died. Mm. And he is from September 1st no longer going to be CEO, which I think that's crazy because like, I mean, for full context, full disclosure, I've been a fan of Apple since like the launch of the iPhone 3GS.
I told you he's the original iPad kid.
But like this is crazy, massive, very fascinating news in the tech world, I think. Mm. The big drama when like Steve Jobs died is that Tim Cook became CEO with like 50 days notice. And that's like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, like what a job to take. And he's done a pretty good job of it. Like he's more
what
than
a... What a Jobs...
Yeah. He's done
take.
More
okay.
than... He's grown the company like more than 1,000% in terms of like its market valuation, but also fuck money and like fuck capitalism.
Totally, totally. But you're like, hell yeah.
I mean, I also think Apple does a lot of what it does better than almost every other tech company, but we can talk about that another time. Mm. But guess who they're putting in is the CEO.
Who's going in?
John Ternus.
Not John Ternus. Who is this man?
He has been... he's been with Apple since 2001.
Yeah.
And he was like the head of hardware within the company. Okay. And now he's becoming CEO. So one of the big things that happened in the transition from Jobs to Cook, this is just a special interest sharing now.
Yeah. Ryan had to do no research into this.
None.
We were a bit like short for time for research this week, but Ryan said, don't worry.
I can talk about this.
Yes.
So Steve Jobs was obviously like as an individual, very involved in like the product design and very much like product.
Yes.
Tim Cook, under Steve Jobs, was COO, so Chief Operating Officer. So he was all about the supply chains, the margins, and all that shit.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And so then when Tim Cook becomes CEO, like that's why you see in the past like 15 years so much growth of Apple, because it's not been about necessarily their product design, although they've come up with like the Apple Watch and shit.
Right.
But it's been about that slow refinement of like, how do we make this company like more efficient?
Mm.
It's fascinating. John Ternus, coming from a hardware background, is a product designer.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a really interesting... Yeah.
Wow. That's
you see what I mean?
I see what you mean. I'm so excited to see what happens.
But...
Are you connect... Wait, sorry. We're connecting our dots in our brain, but can we connect it for the listener real quick?
You connect that.
Okay.
I don't know what we've connected.
Okay.
I thought I said it.
I thought we connected. No, I think that it just basically means that there'll be more like interesting products that'll be having at the front line, you know? Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm so excited to see.
Which will be really interesting.
Yeah.
And Tim Cook, because Steve Jobs died of cancer in 2011. Mm. And so there was no like long handover, which again, that's stressful.
Yeah.
Tim Cook, he's only like 65, but he's not like outward like he's not like tapping out.
Yeah,
he's becoming executive chairman of the board.
Awesome.
So he's going to be able to steward and like give advice
to
John
Turner. Yeah.
And
how do you feel about that?
I think that's fine because I also think they have like a really strong working relationship.
Okay, I love that you
they've
know
been
that.
Together for, like, but like in the press release, one of the things was obviously John is going to become the CEO of Apple.
Yeah.
But one of the things that is going to still stay within Tim's remit is working with policymakers around the world, which is really interesting that they're like not giving or like very slowly handing over the whole responsibility of like dealing with governments, which is like actually a crazy massive job. Like Apple has been in the news so much with like what's been happening in the US because Trump is like, we want manufacturing here. And obviously, like, who the fuck is going to manufacture things in the US? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so...
Not now.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
But like, to literally appease Trump, like, Apple's been producing like a limited amount of servers.
Yes.
You know, and they're like, oh, we made... These are the USA manufactured ones. But it's all like that political thing of just like, you know, satisfying Trump. And then also like managing the relationship with like China, because Apple's been doing a lot of work in recent years to diversify their supply chain, because one of their big risks has historically been that like all their manufacturing comes from China. So when China's not happy with them, or when Apple wants to expand it to China, but like, you know, there's a conflict between like the way that CCP is like very like top down, like totalitarian, dare I say, and the way that Apple is like, we like the internet not being hidden behind a firewall. There's like a conflict of values. So Apple has been trying to diversify their supply chain, but obviously China hasn't liked that because China likes having the control, which is so fair.
Love.
You know? And so basically Tim Cook's still going to do that. And I'm like, that's tea.
That is tea.
Isn't that tea?
That is actually big tea. And I didn't think that I was going to enjoy this, but I thoroughly do.
It's so fascinating.
And I'm really quite excited to see what the future brings.
And then one of the other big dramas was that, so much drama around
this. Yeah, no, tell us.
So Johnny Shruji, who was like the big guy who makes all the, like the computer chips at Apple. He like started their whole Apple Silicon project.
Handmade, yes.
Because you know how like Apple has their own chips in their computers now?
Yes.
Yeah. He did that. That's him. There was like a rumor or like a leak about like 6 months ago that he was looking at leaving. And so obviously they're promoting one of his colleagues to CEO and not him. And so I can surmise that internally one of the big like gossip like dramas would have been, oh my God, is Johnny gonna leave? Because if Johnny leaves, Apple loses its competitive advantage. Because famously in 2019, Johnny was almost poached by Intel to become the CEO of Intel. I know, crazy,
famously,
right?
Yeah.
But he's staying and he's gotten a promotion. So now he's like one of the second most important people in the company.
Oh, well, thank God.
Exactly, because like Apple Silicon.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Wait, so if he doesn't like, he's not given Apple the rights to his microchip?
Well, like he's done the work at Apple, so like it's sure. Apple's, but like his brain is his brain, you know, and he could be smart elsewhere.
So true, and AI can't take it over always.
Exactly. So that's the tea on Apple.
That was awesome tea. I love that. I'm excited for an update. We should do like maybe just a podcast about special interests. Is that crazy?
I don't hate that.
Yeah. Okay. New podcast. Yeah. Special on the Broadly Media.
Broadly recommended?
I like that we still have the higher pitch. We guys know already. We recommend things. Each month we recommend something to read, something to see, and something to listen to. And then we yap a little bit more in our Substack as well, the Broadly Relevant Substack.
Which we will this week when I send it out on the weekend.
Hell yeah, we will. So please subscribe down below. Ryan.
Do you want me to do all my recommendations or do you want me to go through like...
Read. You ask this every single time and it's... We go reread.
Okay.
Yeah. We go watch. We go listen.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do in the order that I wrote down. So we'll start with listen.
Okay.
I'm going to start with recommending a song from Sasha Allen. Now, Sasha Allen is like a pop star. Very like indie.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know when they like they go viral on TikTok but nobody knows about them still?
Yeah.
Very much that energy.
Totally.
But like was on like American Idol or like the X Factor USA, one of the ones in America.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't get like got pretty far but didn't win. And then gotten this shitty record deal, finally got out of it, and the label was like trying to make them do like pop, and they were like, I want to do like guitar-y guitar stuff. Anywho, they've just released a new single called Just Like You, and it's just, I don't know, so funky. And I'm just currently like very much like, anyone with a nice voice and a little bit of guitar, I'm like, put it on, put it on. So yeah, Sasha Allen, Just Like You, great single.
I love that.
It's about if like you as like a trans man are dating another trans man, and then the trans man goes and dates, the one who's not you, goes and dates like a cis woman, and then it's like, she's never going to understand you. Did you love my quick summary of the plot of the song?
I liked it. I never really talk about plots of songs, but that was kind of fun. Okay, my listen is the two-part series of the Maintenance Phase podcast for Russell Brand. It's a two-part series of Russell Brand.
Maintenance Phase. That's tea.
I love Maintenance Phase. They're a great podcast.
No, I know Maintenance Phase.
No, you literally know, but I'm going to tell the people by Aubrey Gordon and Michael Hobbs. One of my favorite podcasts that was recommended by number one fan of the podcast, Chloe. Okay, so I know this has been random of me to be interested in Russell Brand, but this podcast has done so well and I just hate the man even more. And recently Katy Perry has been top of mind for me because...
Well, of course. Well, Victoria Police.
Victoria Police is literally investigating her after Ruby Rose, Australian actress, accused her of sexual assault at Spice Market, which is a club, or was a club, in Melbourne.
CBD.
Have you ever been to Spice Market?
No.
Yeah.
Have you?
I think I have. My sister had a 30th there, randomly.
Oh.
Anyways. So she's been really top of mind for me. And I was like, then looking into her discography, and then I like looked at her documentary again, and then I was like, oh my god, remember the time that Russell Brand like texted her for a divorce? Like, what a diabolical man. And then I remembered that he's also just generally a diabolical man, and it goes into the fact that he was always like this, like from childhood he's been like harassing women and just like has been so entitled from day dot, and then is now in this like right wing conspiracy world. And the way that they do this investigation is so interesting, and I love listening to this. Sometimes I will say I get fatigued by like reading investigatory or like explainer pieces, like articles, and I like the podcast format more, and I think this is a really good one.
Beautiful. What is the link between like, because
Justin Trudeau and Katy Perry?
No, I was going to say, I know what that link is. What's the link between like Maintenance Phase and Russell Crowe? Like, because my understanding was that like the podcast was like about...
It literally is.
Body positivity.
I actually have no idea what...
Oh, they're just doing stuff now.
I actually have no idea why they've decided to do this. But it was... The way that they've described this is the rags to riches tale of how an illegal methamphetamine manufacturer... Oh, no. Sorry. This is the wrong episode.
Okay. I'm like, oh my god, he's a methamphetamine manufacturer too.
Tracing the left to right political trajectory of the unfunniest man in British comedy is how they've described it. I have no idea why they decided to go into this, but I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I don't know why.
I guess it's also that thing of I'm like, every time I see a podcast where like they're like, we're going to talk about this thing. I'm like, and what happens when you finish talking about that thing?
Well, then you become good noticing. It's like Celebrity Memo Book Club. They only talked about Celebrity Memo Book Clubs, and then they transitioned into literally what we do on this podcast.
Do you think Maintenance Phase is transitioning?
Maybe. Well, could be. But they've literally just released another thing about like another like diet expose kind of thing. Okay. Yeah. So they're fine.
I know Ozempic is like so in, so you know,
forever. They'll have material.
GLP-1s.
So true.
Okay, watching recommendations.
Oh my god, my gynecologist recommended me GLP. That's a separate conversation.
Your gynecologist.
My gynecologist.
Okay.
For my endo.
I think I read about that.
It was unprompted.
I swear I read about that.
Yes, I read about that, but there's just not enough research into it for me to feel comfortable doing that.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Watching recommendations, Deadlock, which is on Amazon Prime. This
yes,
did
you've
come
been
out
saying
3 years
that.
Ago.
But season the season one. Two came.
Season two, I think, is coming out now or
yes,
just came out.
It's just come out.
We're currently two episodes in for season two. Mm-hmm. But season one, Gagarella. So it's like it's such an Australian TV show filmed in Tasmania.
Yeah.
And it's like kind of set in like a Tasmanian town, which like has a parody of like dark mofo happening.
Nice.
And like this like female lesbian cop is like teamed up with this not lesbian female cop from the Northern Territory.
Yes.
And they like kind of hate each other for like most of the series. And it's like, oh my God, they become friends and they're like investigating this murder and like all these men keep turning up dead.
Oh.
And it was so like funny and like, but also like, oh, sneaky investigation. And I'm like, do I like cop shows now? Like the sort of like the genre, do I like that now?
Okay.
Because you know, every episode you're like, it was them, it was them, it was them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, mystery.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. But what I really enjoyed about it was how like not a single woman gets murdered.
Oh, I love that.
Not a single person of color gets arrested, except for one scene when a lot of women get arrested. So it, you know, it was like they all get arrested together.
Sure.
But individually, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, it's so interesting how like there's like a whole plot point with like the really masculine police force that comes in to help and like how they're failing. Like it's pretty ACAB-y.
Love that.
Yeah, and it's like woke as shit.
Love that.
Woke as shit.
Not woke as shit.
It's really fun, yeah.
Okay, that's
and
exciting.
So camp. So
I love
fun.
That.
It's self-referential. And one of the actors follows me on Instagram.
Ah! Shut up! Have we spoken about this? Who is it? Name him.
No.
Name him.
they're just local actors.
Okay. No, babe. They're about to be a star after this podcast.
What's your watching recommendation?
Okay, I actually can't remember if I recommended this last time. Yeah. Let's see if you were listening to me. I want to recommend Jury Duty Presents Company Retreat. Have I recommended that before?
I know about Jury Duty.
Okay, so now there's like another season, yeah. And it's based at a company retreat for this like
Blue
fake.
Sky.
Blue Sky. Blue Sky mentioned a fake like hot sauce company, and then they all go to this company retreat, and the main guy in it is just truly the nicest man ever, and didn't know men could be so nice, you know. And I like that it was a person of color this time. I wonder, and essentially they're like set up in this like fake reality Truman Show like kind of vibe. One person is like a real person, the rest of them are actors kind of going through the motions of like what you would see in a TV show, so like really wacky like nonsense like moments, and then the real guy Anthony, who has to kind of just like deal with everything, which I think is
but the concept is that like he doesn't know he's on a TV show.
Yeah, he doesn't know that he's on a TV show.
And he's just like, things are weird, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like totally normal for like, you know, a company to be entirely made up of redheads, you know, or like knocking out your boss in a...
And so the enjoyment of the show is you watching him be shocked by these things.
Yes. And I think it's more the, like, he's put in these such, like, these really bizarre social interactions that normally of, like, people who might be deemed too weird in the real world. And he has such, like, compassion and patience and joy
okay.
for them, you know?
Interesting.
And so I think it's a really nice escape, to be honest, to,
what's
like, watch. It's on Prime Video.
That's okay. Deadlock is too.
Oh, okay, great. but I that's three Prime Videos things that we've mentioned this episode. But I really
surely we could get an affiliate link. No guys, fuck Bezos.
Literally. But yeah, basically I was like, yeah, it's so nice to be able to watch something that like just brings joy and like hope from human existence.
Yeah.
And I know that we talk about the politicization of hope. But let me love it, you know, and that I do. I do always wonder if a woman could handle it in this situation, like, or could figure it out. And I would say yes. I think she'd figure out, like, that she was on a TV show. Like.
But I also think they screen for people who are...
Yeah, yeah.
Who would be able to figure it out.
Yeah, that's true. But you know what it's like? It's literally just like, do you ever watch Punk'd? It's just thought out version of
Prank Patrol.
Prank Patrol. It's just a longer version of Prank Patrol. Yeah.
Recommendations for reading.
Oh my God.
Okay, so I've got a book here.
Okay.
I've actually physically got it.
Physical media. Let's go.
Yes, physical media. I bought it last week. I'm halfway through it. It's called Against Ageism, A Queer Manifesto by Simone van Saarloos, who is Dutch, I think. And it's like a whole manifesto about like why ageism is bad. But what I find really interesting about it is how it's not like old people are powerful and like economically useful and economically productive, but rather like, here's how all the systems that like affect how we view young and old people are just like, you know, capitalism and transphobia and misogyny and ableism, like doing bad shit on us. And it's really interesting, like, writing, because it's just like, oh, I was reading a Goodreads review of it, and the Goodreads review was like so fun. I love, this is a quote from one of the Goodreads reviews. I love theory that does not bother hiding the spite from which it is written. And I'm just like, yeah, I love a bit of like just rage. It's also really interesting because it's written by a 30-year-old who talks a lot about their old partner. They don't give like an age for their partner, but the dedication in the start of the book, I was like, I'm gooped. Here it is. For L, my youngest lover so far, for all your faggot wisdom. And I'm just like, I love the energy of this. It's crazy.
Look more into this person.
It's crazy.
Simone Van
Sarlous.
Totally.
I follow them on Instagram.
It's a really nice cover. It's very... Yeah.
It's a bunch of lesbians having sex in a park.
Period.
Could be you one day.
Could be. You never know.
What's your reading recommendation?
Okay, so I do have a recommendation. And sometimes I feel like with these recommendations, I try to be like, I feel like pretend to be performatively smarter than I am. But actually, it's just like not who I am, you know? this is what I actually have been reading. And it's a piece by a colleague of mine at Pedestrian TV called Tom DeSalvo. And it's called What Real Sex Workers Are Saying About Euphoria's Extremely Risky Portrayal of the Industry.
I saw this on Instagram.
Yes. And they
was
all...
Was it your story?
Yes, I reposted this. yes. And he interviewed a bunch of different sex workers about how they feel about Euphoria. And it's drawing... The show's new season is drawing a lot of criticism from advocacy groups over its heavy focus on sex work and just its really callous portrayal of sex work. And Sam Levinson is, of course, you know, just doing inaccurate and potentially harmful nonsense, you know. And one of the sex workers says, when you have a white man writing multiple sex worker storylines, the characters are at an extreme risk of being portrayed as one-dimensional, objectified bodies of a white man's fantasy. And I think we saw that happen as well, just in just as a woman in general, happen in his past work, like in The Idol as well. So I think this was really great I think there's a lot of like speculation and a lot of like chat and like not a lot of respect on sex workers. And again, this is like giving permission to do so, like to have even less respect for them. And I think it was really great and admirable of Tom to put in the work and actually talk to them about their opinion on this matter. So we'll link that in the bio.
Should we check out?
Let's.
So now I want to know what is out.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, so what is out? Feeling bad about doom scrolling on my phone for 2 hours. I really like it. It gives me joy and apathy. And as we know, I'm in my apathy era.
That's horrible.
So joy and apathy, I think that's a pretty good combo. So.
Okay, well, at least shame is out.
Yeah, shame is out, babe. Shame is out. What's out for you?
You know, like the photo ratio 4:5?
Yes.
Yeah, that's out. Because Instagram has just brought in 3:4.
Period.
That's
and
life right.
is run by
For
capitalism.
The first time in 11 years, because you remember grade 11,
yeah.
when they finally released 4:5 photos and it was like longer photos.
Oh, I remember.
They're releasing 3:4 photos on Instagram.
If you loved this episode, please tell a friend. And yes, go subscribe to our Substack so you can see the rest of our
and
inklings.
See what I write this weekend.
Yes. and the rest of our recommendations. Thank you so much for listening. We love you. Bye.